Evan Bray Show. The Round Table of Justice.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Roundtable of Justice, although I'm going to maybe just jump in with a non-justice-related announcement. Saskatchewan Rough Riders news conference this morning just announced the 2027 Grey Cup will be hosted here in Saskatchewan. It will be hosted at Mosaic Stadium in Regina. Saskatchewan Rough Riders literally making that announcement moments ago. So, for those of you that love to have the Grey Cup here in Saskatchewan, it will happen again in 2027. We will have rider reporter Britton Gray join us a little bit later on this hour to talk about that. So this hour is set out, of course, the Roundtable of Justice. Every day, every Monday, we set aside an hour to talk about something topical. It could be a news story. It could be legislation. And that is the case this week. We heard last week, late in the week, the government of Canada proposing bail and sentencing reform in the way of legislative changes. Over 80 clauses of changes to the bail and sentencing regime under the criminal code. The measures aiming to make bail harder to obtain for violent organized crime repeat offenders and to impose tougher sentencing for certain offenses. We heard the Justice Minister, Sean Fraser, speaking about this last week, and this is part of what he had to say.
This morning, we introduced the Bail and Sentencing Reform Act. This is a package of sweeping reforms that includes more than 80 targeted measures that will make bail laws stricter and sentencing tougher, in particular for violent and repeat offenders. This new law follows extensive consultation with law enforcement, provinces and territories, municipalities, and community partners. Today we are changing the law with a stronger focus on public safety. Last week in Alberta, we met as federal, provincial, and territorial ministers responsible for both justice and public safety. I want to say thank you to those partners in particular. Although we as the federal government may hold the pen when it comes to changing Canada's criminal laws, it's the provinces who have the responsibility to administer the system, and as part of a team effort, they deserve to be listened to. Many of the reforms that are in this bill are the product of our partnership with provinces and territories and our shared national commitment to keep Canadians safe and restore public confidence in the justice system. It rests on three key pillars. First is stronger laws that protect communities and keep dangerous offenders off our streets. Second, it will involve support on the front line, including 1,000 new RCMP, 1,000 new border officers, and better tools for both police and prosecutors. Third, we know that it will take upstream investments aimed at preventing crime in the long term, including specifically affordable and supportive housing, mental health and addictions, and programs for youth who are at risk. Today, we are focused on stronger laws to protect our communities. Let's start with bail. We are going to change the criminal law to ensure that the bail system is not viewed as some get-out-of-jail-free card. We're going to ensure that bail hearings treat public safety as a paramount concern. When risks to the public cannot be managed, offenders will be detained. We've heard repeatedly from municipalities, from business associations, and provinces that the bail system needs to respond not only to the most violent crime in our society, but also to the highest volume offenders who do not respect the law and are repeatedly released into our communities only to offend again and again. Though these individuals make up a small proportion of our population, they can, in some instances, represent a huge proportion of the criminal activity that we actually witness in our communities. This is eroding public trust in the justice system, and this new law will make it easier for courts to order the most high-volume offenders to be detained.
So those are some preliminary comments we heard from Justice Minister Sean Fraser. That was Thursday of last week. You'll remember on Friday we had Kurt Griffiths on. He's a criminologist from Canada. We've done lots of years of work at Simon Fraser University. He was very critical of these legislative changes, feeling it was more politically motivated than aimed at truly enhancing community safety. I wanted to get a couple more different perspectives on this. And so today we bring a couple of guests to our Roundtable of Justice who both represent different interests when it comes to this sort of bail and sentencing reform. I'll introduce first a guest who we have had on our program before. Shakir Rahim is with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. He's the Director of Criminal Justice. Shakir, thank you so much for joining our show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Mark Brayford, who also has been on our program a number of times. He's a criminal defense lawyer out of Saskatoon, working for the Brayford Shapiro Law Firm. Mark, thank you for giving us your time today.
Good to be here.
Let's maybe just start off with just general sense of your thoughts on this bail and sentencing reform that has been formally announced. We heard hints of it over a week ago, formally announced Thursday of last week. Maybe Shakir, I'll start with you.
Sure. You know, one of our main concerns among many with the new legislation is that it contains no proposal to collect better data about the bail system. We've now had three successive federal ministers of justice say that there is an absence of data. We can't know how many people were out on bail in a given year that allegedly reoffended. And without that information, it's hard to get an accurate picture of the bail system. We do not hear, for example, about the number of people who were released who fully complied with their conditions, nor can we see trends over time about how many people are allegedly reoffending and how that relates to the crime rate overall. So it was disappointing to see that, again, despite hearing from the government about how important this issue is to public safety, there still is no effort to collect accurate and standardized data about the issue.
Okay, we're going to dig into that topic a little bit more deeply. Shakir Rahim from the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. But I want to give Mark Brayford an opportunity. Mark, your thoughts, just general thoughts on the announcement last week with regard to bail reform and sentencing reform.
Well, they're more in the nature of virtue signaling. The public is concerned about crime, understandably so. They're certainly concerned when someone who's already out on bail commits a further offense. But quite frankly, these changes are going to have little change to those, if I can call it, tragedies that sometimes occur. You can't prevent everything with laws. Quite frankly, that 1,000 police officers that they're talking about, if that really is 1,000, if those are really new numbers or those really new resources, that will make a lot bigger difference as far as public safety. Having more police on the street acts as a deterrent and helps prevent crime. Unfortunately, most laws come after the fact, and there's a limit to what you can do by just changing laws. I don't see these laws as necessarily having a great impact on breaches by people that are out on bail. And quite frankly, there's some elements of unfairness, and if I can call it constitutional concerns. Our Constitution presumes everyone to be innocent and says everyone's entitled to reasonable bail unless there's a reason not. And we've got to be really careful that we don't make the system so cumbersome that people that should be presumed innocent should be out on bail aren't released on bail. It's a tragedy when someone spends a year or two waiting for their case only to be shown to be innocent.
So can we just talk about that for a second, Mark? You know, these reforms expand the use of reverse onus bail conditions. So from a defense lawyer perspective, do you think that will shift the fundamental presumption of innocence in the justice system? Will this make a big difference?
Well, I don't want to overstate the effect of the onus in a bail hearing. So the onus is basically, should they have to prove that you should be kept in, or should you have to prove that you should be released? And so that's what we're talking about when we're changing the onus. And will it make a difference in some cases? Yes, although probably less than we think. Probably what it will result in is, if the onus is on the state to prove that you should be detained, then the police look really carefully at it and say, we're not going to be able to justify keeping this person in custody. Let's release this person immediately on certain conditions. And by and large, those people get released by the police and satisfactorily complete their bail conditions up to the point of them going to court. If you reverse the onus, then the police will often be in a situation where they feel like they have to detain the person so that the person can then justify to the judge why they should be released. And so it means that we've got a lot of people that are spending 1, 2, 3 days in court that might otherwise have been released by the police. And that, so that's a significant drain on resources. It doesn't sound like that much, but when all of a sudden you have a whole bunch more people spending time that are going to get released on bail, but waiting for their bail hearing.
Okay, we're going to take our first break. That's Mark Brayford, criminal defense lawyer from Brayford Shapiro Law. I've also got Shakir Rahim, Canadian Civil Liberties Association Director of Criminal Justice, joining us on the program today. Roundtable of Justice, talking bail and sentencing reform when we come back here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
We are into the Roundtable of Justice today, talking bail and sentencing reform with two great guests. But before we jump back into that, we know that the riders set up for a major news conference at 10 o'clock. Our own Britton Gray, writer reporter, was down at Mosaic Stadium for that. And Britton Gray joins me by phone this morning. Britton, what was the big announcement we heard? It sounds like Grey Cup coming back to Saskatchewan.
All roads will lead to Regina in 2027, as it was announced that Saskatchewan will host the 114th Grey Cup. It's expected to be a big celebration, right? We know how big CFL football is here. The commissioner was here today to make the announcement. Scott Moe, Regina's mayor. There's a lot of people that go into doing something like this and excited to see what they can do after just hosting recently, what they learned from that. I understand that a lot of the fan events will be held indoors because you never know what the weather will be like in Saskatchewan in November. But November 7th, 2027, championship game played here once again at Mosaic Stadium.
Did you say November 7th?
Yes.
So that's
what they said in their releases. Yeah. Up a little bit earlier then.
Earlier.
Than this year, yeah.
Yeah, well, lots to look forward to, lots to talk about, and we appreciate you jumping on the program. To you have anything you want to talk about with bail reform, Britton?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Thanks, Britton. Appreciate you joining the show.
Yeah.
Britton Gray. So, the announcement from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, we will be hosting here in Saskatchewan Grey Cup 2027, November the 7th. You can mark it on your calendars. We're 2 years away from the Grey Cup coming back to this province. Lots more details to unfold there. Okay. Back to the Roundtable of Justice, bail and sentencing reform. I'm appreciative of both of my guests that are joining us today. Mark Brayford, criminal defense lawyer from Brayford Shapiro Law, and Shakir Rahim, who is with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. So Shakir, I want to come back to you and look at this from a different perspective, because much of this legislation targets repeat violent offenders, those linked to organized crime who have basically been charged with, convicted of, or accused of guilty or violent offenses in the community. Community safety being such a big thing. Do you see from your organization, the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, the need to tighten things up to protect citizens of this country from further violent offenses at the hands of these offenders?
Well, I have a few thoughts on that question. The first thing I would highlight is that the bill actually includes a number of provisions that will apply directly to first-time offenders. So the reverse onus provisions, for example, are not restricted to people who are repeat offenders or who have any particular history of violence. And so we've heard that rhetoric about the bill, but does not necessarily reflect fully in the legislation itself. As for public safety, of course, everybody should be able to feel safe in their homes and on the streets. The question is whether this legislation is going to deliver on that promise. And bail in Canada, contrary to what some have asserted, is not lenient. The percentage of people, for example, who are in provincial jails in pretrial detention is at 76%, and that's up from around 20% in the 1980s. So are there perhaps a few cases that we need to examine to determine what went wrong or, you know, what potential issues might be? We can't eliminate all risk, but we can tailor a system. Sure, there are. But regrettably, because we don't have that data, we have these sort of categorical approaches to law reform that may end up and will end up catching people who aren't the kind of headline-making cases that folks are concerned about.
So, Mark, can I get you to comment on, we've heard Shakir talk a couple of times now about the lack of good data on a national standpoint. And I will tell you, from my previous job with the police, each individual police service would be able to provide some sort of data and statistics that shows the number of people committing offenses while on some sort of a release document. But nationally, Mark, is that a void that we don't seem to be able to put a finger on yet?
Well, it is, because we don't have any statistics, and we see these individual high-profile cases where somebody was charged with something, released, and then allegedly reoffended in a violent way, and that's very troubling. But that has always happened, and the one thing that we know for sure is you can't predict the future. So you're asking judges to do risk management, and quite frankly, these new provisions telling judges they've got to look at this and look at that. These are things that judges already were looking at. We have, you know, judges, they obviously have lots of common sense and lots of experience, and they're going to consider whether or not an offender has behaved in the same ways that these new provisions require the judge to look. So are things getting worse? Well, without statistics, we don't know. And so as far, if we're talking about virtue signaling to the public that you can feel safer, feel better, screwing up the system with cumbersome changes that aren't particularly effective, like the changing the reverse onus to apply in more cases, it isn't going to make that big a difference. It may cause a few more people to be detained, and perhaps when they shouldn't be. And I don't see that as making that big a difference. In a helpful way. So, as someone who, you know, thinks about virtue signaling, making the public feel more safe. I mean, if we talked about changing the castle law to make it presumptively self-defense if someone's invaded your home in the middle of the night to respond with violence, and to say that's presumptively justified, I think the public would foresee that as something that made them feel more confident in their safety than some of these bail changes.
Okay, so that's a great lead-in, Mark, to where I want to go after the break. We're in the Roundtable of Justice. I've got two great guests, Mark Brayford from Brayford Shapiro Law in Saskatoon, and Shakir Rahim, who is with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. I want to dig into this notion of principle of restraint and how it applies to these changes, or if it is prohibitive of steps forward, like many people are saying. And I want to talk about what maybe positive bail reform or legislative changes might look like in the criminal justice world with our two guests when we come back here on the Roundtable of Justice. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Welcome back to the Roundtable of Justice. Today, talking about bail and sentencing reform. But as we have announced over the last couple of breaks, also following the story, the news that the 2027 Grey Cup will be hosted in Saskatchewan. Our own Britton Gray was down at Mosaic Stadium for that news conference. So fairly exciting news for the province, for Mosaic Stadium, for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So 2027 Grey Cup will be back in our province. Okay, roundtable of justice today, as I said, Bail and Sentencing Reform Act, which was proposed on Thursday of last week by the federal government. Now I've got three great guests. I've got another person joining the discussion. So we started off with Shakir Rahim, who is still with us, Canadian Civil Liberties Association. I have Mark Brayford, a criminal defense lawyer from Brayford Shapiro Law, and now Brian Pfefferly. Fresh out of court, but he's got some time on his hands. So Brian Pfefferly also joining us, criminal defense lawyer from Pfefferly Law out of Saskatoon. Brian, thank you for joining the discussion.
Hey, thanks for having me, and I'm happy to bring down the IQ of the
guests here. You'll do just fine. I'm going to get to you in a second, but I am going to start with Mark Brayford. Mark, the legislation clarifies the latter principle and the principle of restraint don't apply in reverse onus cases. Can you give us just really quick an overview of what those two things are and how you see that being impacted in this situation?
Well, the restraint is that judges have been directed that they shouldn't impose any more release conditions than necessary or are reasonable for the nature of the alleged crime that's pending. And so you might put someone on these kind of conditions. In other words, no firearms, not leave the province, perhaps like banish them from their hometown. No contact, perhaps, with their spouse or with their children. Perhaps post a large amount of cash bail, a curfew, maybe even house arrest. So these are the kind of conditions that may, depending on the nature of the allegation, be warranted as bail terms, but the judges have been directed don't impose them if they're not necessary. So only use the ones that are necessary. The problem with this new legislation is that if it's a reverse onus and you have to establish why you should be released, and you're as a defense lawyer, you're going to saddle your client with a whole bunch of conditions because you want to persuade the judge that they can feel comfortable releasing your client. So this reverse onus for first offenders that's going to apply to certain charges, it's going to mean that these people get a lot of conditions, and so restraint won't be the order of the day then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's build on that. Brian, I want to bring you into the conversation based on what Mark just talked about. Many people, including the Conservative Party, which are critical of the federal Liberal government and this legislation, saying if you don't pull the principle of restraint altogether, you will not achieve any noticeable impact on community safety with these changes. Based on what Mark just talked about, Brian, how do you see this then rolling out?
Well, that is a very good question, Evan. I mean, I have to say, I hate to say as a one of these left-wing wacko defense lawyers that I sometimes agree with the conservatives, but on this point, I just don't see this actually solving any of the problems that the communities that are facing increased criminality are really dealing with. I don't see any of the measures as actually evidence-based or focusing on the issues. We have to keep in mind that in Canada, we have the Constitution, which deals with all of these issues, which are so important to the fundamental principles of justice. And so making sure that draconian punishments aren't imposed upon people. And I don't see any of the material that's being brought forward as really evidence-based addressing any of the issues that's causing a lot of the issues in our community, which is mental illness, addiction issues, poverty, and any of those sorts of issues. So, I mean, I don't think that it's wrong to criticize it. This is more about optics than outcomes.
We're chatting today with three great guests. That's Brian Pfefferly, criminal defense lawyer from Pfefferly Law. I want to go back now to Shakir Rahim with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. I read one of the statements from CCLA arguing that these laws could actually worsen the systemic overrepresentation of Indigenous or racialized people. I'm wondering, Shakir, if you could dig into that a little bit. How do you see that happening, and how does opposing these reforms maybe impact that one way or the other?
Certainly. So, you know, we've heard some of the other guests today talk about these release plans or conditions that can be imposed on folks. And When it comes to individuals who may be Indigenous, racialized, or otherwise individuals who have socioeconomic challenges, the more conditions that are required, whether it's certain ties, you know, to the community by being able to have a surety who can vouch for you, whether it's a specific type of house arrest condition, that impact and the inability to access bail is greater on people who don't have those kinds of supports or resources that they can draw on in the community. And so what happens as a result is that disproportionately, when we look at who ends up getting denied bail when you create these additional restrictions and barriers, it's folks who, you know, may not be as well off or who may be struggling with different kinds of challenges. And we know, of course, already as a matter of fact that in prisons throughout this country, there is an overrepresentation of Indigenous persons, of certain racialized groups. And so that's how those groups are going to be further disadvantaged by these laws.
So do you expect to see, Shakir, and maybe be part of constitutional challenges going forward, or will you let this roll through decision-making, the legislative process first to see how far it moves along? Do you have a strategy you can share with us there?
I certainly think we'll consider a constitutional challenge, in particular to the reverse onus provisions. You know, the Supreme Court of Canada had two cases in the 1990s called Pearson and Morales that outline when those reverse onus provisions can be justified. And part of their assessment was, you know, the notion that these are narrowly applied. They apply to a very small number of offenses. There's a specific form of dysfunction that's been identified to which the reverse onuses are restricted. And it seems to me that as reverse onuses continue to be trotted out, occurred again also with Bill C-48 3 years ago, that it's running afoul of these clear statements of law by the Supreme Court.
Okay, here's what I'm proposing we do. Let's take our last break, because when we had Kurt Griffiths on the show last week, he, of course, criminologist for many years, Simon Fraser University, he was quite critical of these legislative or proposed legislative changes. I asked him the question, what then would you do? If there's we need to find a way to make change, how do we do it? I want to give each of my three guests a couple of minutes each to lay out their thoughts on what reform might look like for the justice system. So again, my guests, Shakir Rahim, who is with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, Mark Brayford, criminal defense lawyer from Brayford Shapiro Law, and Brian Pfefferly, criminal defense lawyer from Pfefferly Law. We'll take our break. We'll come back. Their thoughts on what reform should look like when we return here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
This is an important conversation we're having today on the Roundtable of Justice, and I've appreciated my three guests. Last week, the federal government came out with proposed Bail and Sentencing Reform Act changes. They, of course, have not become legislation yet, but we will see where that goes. My guests today all have a different view, a different perspective on the criminal justice system, depending on the seats they sit in. We've got Shakir Rahim with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. And then we've got two criminal defense lawyers, Mark Brayford from Brayford Shapiro Law and Brian Pfefferly from Pfefferly Law. And maybe, Brian, I'll start with you. This is the same question, essentially, I'm going to pose to all three of my guests to wrap up the segment, is if these reform and sentencing changes aren't hitting the mark, what do we need to do? If we can all agree we want and need safer communities, what do we need to do from a legislative reform standpoint, Brian, to make that happen?
I'm going to take maybe the easy way out a little bit, Evan, and maybe speak to how we should do it rather than what we should do. I think, first of all, we should prioritize evidence-based strategies. The other thing I think we really need to do is streamline processes. So that means more judges, more prosecutors, more legal aid lawyers. We need to increase the ability for individuals to be tried in a faster period of time. Our jails are full of individuals presumed innocent, many of whom ultimately are found not guilty. And that's a big picture issue that we need to address. The other thing that minimizes unnecessary pretrial detention, and it targets the people that are real risks to public safety. The other thing I'd like to see would be supervision and monitoring, focusing resources on monitoring and supervision. We heard in this province when there was warrants outstanding for the tragedy in the James Smith Cree Nation, that we had just a handful of officers dealing with literally hundreds of people in warrant status. That is unacceptable. The public should be rightly outraged by the fact that we aren't dedicating enough resources because they're stretched too thin. And there is tracking devices. There's other technological improvements that can allow people to be released. We use pretrial detention to house people that are otherwise homeless or unhoused. We use pretrial detention to sometimes deal with people that are suffering from mental illnesses. And so we shouldn't be using bail or denying people bail that are not otherwise dangerous just simply because they're a nuisance. And we are in communities that are being overrun by addiction and homelessness, and I understand it. I live in downtown Saskatoon. I work in downtown Saskatoon. It is deeply troubling when you see encampments starting. We need to deal with this. Those people are not criminals. They're poor. They become criminals because of circumstance. And that's the sort of targeted strategies I'd like to see. Again, I'd say optics should not go over outcomes, and this is again we're missing the mark. So that would be my comments, and I know my colleagues probably have better, smarter ideas than me, so I'll pass it off to
thanks
them.
For that, I'm going to start the clock running. 2 minutes, Mark Brayford. What needs to change?
Well, I think we have to look at what's worked in the past in this area. If we look at impaired driving, the number of deaths, and this is something where we do have the statistics, the number of deaths that has fallen by about 80%, every death is too many, but the fact that we've had the number of deaths fall by, that's so dramatically. What did we do? We had heavy enforcement. We had real strict enforcement. We had heavy penalties, and we had a justice system that used to try people in about 3 or 4 months. We did not focus just on that. However, we looked at addictions. We looked at attitudes towards alcohol. It's certainly my perception that people are drinking far less alcohol and drinking far less to intoxication. Addiction and intoxication by alcohol, addiction to drugs, those are driving forces in the criminal law area. So simply heavy enforcement isn't going to solve our problem if we don't deal with simultaneously with addictions, drug trafficking, and drinking to the intoxication level. Those are things we've got to simultaneously deal with to speed up the justice system. 40 years ago, we had 40-some provincial court judges. We now have approximately 50. There's been a negligible, if any, increase in the number of provincial court judges over the last 40 years. So we need to get back where we're running trials in under 6 months. It was unfortunate when the Supreme Court said that that a speedy trial wasn't impacted until it was either 18 months in provincial court or 30 months in King's Bench. Quite frankly, that's not a speedy trial the way I look at it. We've got to speed things up, and it can be done. It's easier to speed up the justice system than it is the medical system, mm-hmm. and we could do it.
Okay. Mark, I'm going to jump in and give the last couple minutes to Shakir Rahim, Canadian Civil Liberties Association. What needs to happen to improve safety in this country?
Well, you know, I think it can be helpful, you know, as hard as it might be, to put ourselves in the shoes of one of these individuals who we hear about, one of these repeat offenders. Maybe that person grew up in an environment where they didn't have, you know, a caring mother, father, or parent. Maybe they were a victim of sexual abuse or physical abuse. Now they don't have a place to sleep at night. They may have a problem with drugs, and they're offending to help support their habit. They're going into a jail that's overcrowded, where they're not getting the help that they need. And then they're being released with a criminal record. They can't get a job. And so where are they going to turn? It's not about being soft on crime. It's not about being a bleeding heart liberal. It's about understanding what works. And here in Toronto, for example, we have a new initiative called Dunhouse, where this same kind of person who has these complex challenges gets supportive housing. They get the help they need. They get healthcare, mental and physical. And there are stories of people who have been caught in this cycle of offending who finally have a chance to break out. And of course they want to better their lives. Of course they want to be a productive, pro-social member of society. But right now, our system does not give them that chance. And we see in the United States, for example, that higher and higher incarceration rates, though it might be superficially appealing, doesn't actually lead to a reduction in the crime rate overall. And so I think we really have to go in that direction, in addition to, you know, pursuing proper independent studies of the criminal justice system and of the bail system, so that whatever legislative reforms we enact do have a foundation in evidence and collaboration with the different partners in our system.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. We literally hit the end of the clock, but I very much appreciate it. All three, Shakir Rahim, Canadian Civil Liberties Association, Mark Brayford from Brayford Shapiro Law, and Brian Pfefferly from Pfefferly Law. Thank you all for joining me today on the Roundtable of Justice.
Thanks, Evan.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you.
You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.